was so broken. It was in pieces. My heart was so broken. And now I'm puzzling. I cheer I go now, trying to run ahead of this heartbreak train, thinking it will never get hold of me. My heart was so broken. Said I'm the good after jam. My heart was so broken. After the lichen, it'll rule arms and uncannonia.
On Free Radio, 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. It's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, March 1st. The winds are blowing, and it's cold out there, although some people claim it's warm. I've seen them in shorts. We have special guests Anita and Steve on the air, and who knows, we may get a surprise. Well, we'll get into that in a bit. Stay tuned.
Ciertamente no eran dioses. No eran Viracocha. Cuando Pizarro entró al Cusco y junto con el padre Valverde decidieron la muerte de nuestro amado señor Atahualpa, a pesar del rescate que pagamos, equivalente a 3 habitaciones repletas de oro, nos dimos cuenta entonces de las verdaderas intenciones de esos hombres. Pero ya era tarde. La sangre había comenzado a derramarse y esas primeras y queridas gotas se iban a constituir después en un río inmenso que recorrería todo el continente y ya no habría salvación.
Como mi charqui, tomo mi chicha, tengo mi calla, mi cumbi, y ahora mis marquis hago mi chuño, y en esta pacha quiero vivir. Tú me presentas Luna Valverde junto a Pizarro, un nuevo dios. Me das un libro que llamas Biblia, con el que dices habla tu Dios. Nada se escucha en forma que intento.
And that's enough of El Cóndor Pasa, El Mito del Incara. It's disco numero uno, but we'll talk about that later. If you're more interested in that than the show, then, well, you can call the Huff line, 423-HUFF. That's my off-air number. I'm Robert Norris. And this is a two-hour show coming up on civil rights and wrongs and in-betweens here in Santa Cruz. In the studio with me, I have two guests. I'm going to even turn up their mics to show you how much I respect them. We have the infamous, actually perhaps little known, or perhaps I don't know how known you are, Steve Senko and Anita Henry. Hey, Steve, welcome to the show.
How you doing?
Come close to that mic. You have to be kind of about an inch away for us to hear you audibly.
How you doing?
Very good. I think that worked. And you, how about you, Anita? Are you...
I am here, fully present, Anita Henry.
Indeed. And you, in fact, are a MedX cannabis provider to and caretaker.
I am, and I am also a patient who is seriously ill.
But still here, holding down the fort in the studio.
When the problem arises, I stand up.
Indeed.
I get dressed and I get out, and I'm here, Robert.
And I appreciate that. In order to drag this out a little longer, I'm going to begin playing something from the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of last Tuesday. The issue today, for those of you who might not know what we're talking about, is, well, the variety of issues. They have to do with both medical marijuana and also... We're actually going to begin with a little bit about recreational marijuana, too, which is was supposedly made the lowest priority by 63% of the voters at the last city vote. You may remember Measure K, which probably most listeners here, if you voted in Santa Cruz, voted for, has passed, and yet we still don't see a commission established, an oversight commission. So that was required to be on the city council agenda last Tuesday, mandated by the voters. Mike Rodkin couldn't veto it. Ed Porter couldn't say no. Emily Riley couldn't dump it off the agenda. It had to be there because you, the voters, voted for it. Now, I always thought it was kind of a weak-ass measure. I mean, you know, merely spending money trying to do what Public Records Act requests presumably could to some extent do before this and to some extent have done. What's going on with the marijuana busts and how many are there in Santa Cruz? Because, as you may remember, Measure K is supposed to make marijuana enforcement in private by adults the lowest priority. They tried that one in Berkeley 30 years ago, and the police ignored it, upped enforcement, as they have in Santa Cruz downtown, doing felony busts in front of borders a couple years ago. And there hasn't been any indication to me of a meaningful slackening. We haven't seen any comparative stats either from the pro-K or anti-K people, which always would be useful to hear from. But I'm glad any measure that moves towards removing this idiot prohibition is an excellent measure. And even KSCO talk show hosts agree with me. Any preliminary comments from our guests on this subject? I know this is not the thing you came in to talk about, but I've got you trapped in the studio.
Well, prohibition is a completely different issue than medical use. Medical use is a very strong necessity. I've seen... just literally miracles happen because of people using cannabis in end-stage cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It can help them eat, it can help them sleep, and I've actually seen a case to where a person literally came out of the beginning of renal failure and lived another 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And in those 5 weeks, he got to visit his family, visit his church, visit his relatives.
Well, we know that... Cannabis, good cannabis, is therapeutic and healing, but I'd have a hard time saying it's a cure for anything. It certainly helps relieve many conditions. But what I wanted to say now that I have a moment is my being on the show and my voice and opinion is really representative of dozens of people that I know in this county. And I really would like to get to talk about people having access to their medicine, the two dispensaries that were given carte blanche to open up, the problems people are having, the profiteering that's going on, the lack of compassion that's going on, and people being exploited. And that's what I want to talk about tonight.
You know, I think in deference to... you know, the fact that we have two patients here in the studio who might not be as strong and hardy and long-winded as the rest of us, I'm going to actually hold up on the Measure K bit from City Council until later in the show when I will be playing it. Some of you have already seen it because it went out over community TV and it had to do with the short version is City Council is challenging Measure K and trying to gut the Oversight Committee. That's what they're doing. And that is not really neither here nor there for medical marijuana, though I think attacks on recreational marijuana also impact medical marijuana, too.
How can they be talking about having a city oversight committee on Measure K when they didn't even discuss having an oversight committee on allowing these dispensaries to open? What the hell is going on? What are these people thinking?
So, of course, the Oversight Committee on K has to do with keeping an eye on the police department and seeing whether they are, in fact, respecting the will of the voters of Santa Cruz, which, of course, we know the police would always be very concerned about doing when they're not receiving federal grants for marijuana enforcement. But that's supposed to be banned, too, by this measure. So the problem is that City Attorney Barrasoni has taken Measure K to court, attempting to gut it by, in essence, suggesting that Measure K violates the city's charter because it will the Oversight Committee will be asking the police for stats when, in fact, as I pointed out at City Council, all they need to do is ask the city manager to ask the police for stats to do the little dance that you're supposed to do. So there's no real problem except that the police department, I suspect, with John Barrasoni in their pocket, I'm afraid, wants to, throw a wrench in any kind of oversight over them. And that is it's typical because they gutted the police, they destroyed the police review board back in 2003. Anything you want to say, Steve?
I have nothing but praise for law enforcement because of the fact that the majority of people who are seriously ill cannot go to the dispensaries without giving up food money. And they have to grow their own. And it was a serious problem with basically robberies, people be having their medicine stolen as they tried to grow it. And law enforcement has done a great job of discouraging these in-home robbers and these burglaries. They've done great work all throughout the county.
That's good. But I don't think they've done particularly good work in banning and going after marijuana smokers, users, or sellers.
They're still going after the occasional documented medical
that's
patient.
That's correct. I mean, that's our
paraplegics
concern. I mean,
are still
anybody
being...
who steals or robs anything from anybody, except, of course, the high powers that run us, who do so regularly with our consent, and then use it to kill other people in other countries, has my sympathies. I mean, obviously, we all kind of agree on that, I think. The issue here is whether we're going to let the city council gut the current law at the behest of a police department which doesn't want any oversight. It doesn't want people looking in on what they're doing, even when the voters say, all we want you to do is give us reports about when you make a marijuana bust, what happens, so we can be sure that, eager beaver officers are not fucking up or, expressing their own personal prejudices, or if, Lord forfend, the police department itself hasn't altered its priorities because of some medieval notion that marijuana is a dangerous drug that must be controlled and people must be arrested for using it. They would never do that in Santa Cruz County, I know that. But, of course, they do. Go ahead.
There's a very interesting fact that they don't speak about it too much anymore, but when it first started, when CAMP lost their funding, they had 1 week's worth of helicopter fuel allotted to them for this area. Couch Distributing stepped in with $2 million. Now, here we have an alcohol distributor, helping fight the war against...
And CAMP, of course, is the helicopter campaign that goes over and surveys... Yeah.
And Couch is the large beer distributor.
It's interesting. I want to point out that I talked with D.A. Bob Lee again. I mentioned this to you, Anita, earlier, about the issue of, you got these two distribution centers opening in the city. And here I think we're going to have a difference of opinions. This could make for good radio here. I think distribution centers serve a function. Even profiteers serve a function in the sense that some people just don't have a facility to grow their own. They need to buy it. Now, maybe they should be a bit more regulated in the sense that we need to knock down their prices to a level that people can afford. I'm not quite sure how that could be done, but, maybe Anita will have some suggestions about that. But what Bob Lee's DAs, including Pam Keto, went after Roger Mensch of the Hemporium, a medical marijuana server that opened up in the county and has been pursued relentlessly by Bob Lee. He's still fighting two charges that have just reached the Supreme Court, the California Supreme Court. And he's also fighting a second bunch of charges all about growing, distributing, selling marijuana, allegedly for medical purposes. And, Lee had a lot of things to say. Oh, his son turned him in. Oh, he's profiteering. And I said, Is he doing anything that Lisa Molyneux of Greenway and who's the other person?
Ken Sampson.
And Ken Sampson of?
Santa Cruz Patients Collective.
Those are the two cannabis distributors where if you walk in, you present a card or a letter of recommendation from your doctor, they will sell you marijuana for medical purposes.
At exorbitant prices. At just exorbitant prices.
I was
a member, but I'll probably find out tomorrow.
And we're going to talk about that.
I'm totally against profiteering off the weak and the vulnerable.
Right.
Something is happening to Santa Cruz since we've had the earthquake, with the cleansing of downtown, with the upscale shops where people can't go to shop to meet their daily needs, should not apply to a medical marijuana dispensary. Now, I'm not talking about general use. I'm talking about people that are ill, who are not able to work, who live on government benefits, who are going to go and pay $20 a gram at the dispensaries and feel grateful to the city council because now they have access and a place to go.
So, again, and I just want to get this thing quickly out of the way and just a bit of news to folks. D.A. Bob Lee showed that he was as ignorant as Vice Mayor Coonerty is of the sleeping ban law, but arguing against it and making public statements about it nonetheless, as Coonerty does. What D.A. Bob Lee was telling me was that we don't go after Lisa Molyneux's Greenway and these other clubs, and that shows how reasonable we are. And I said, wait a minute, you may have one standard for mention, another standard for, what's the standard? I mean, if I'm going to open up a club, what's the deal?
And we want these clubs to be grassroots. We don't want people from outside coming in who are homeowners with huge vehicles that are only interested in making money. I'm disgusted by the culture. I'm disgusted by the greed. And I'm disgusted by the profiteering off of sick people.
And I am more disgusted by Bob Lee and the power of the district attorney's office to go after anybody he wants in the marijuana field and then claim that the reason he does this is because no one has the right to open a club, period, unless they're a care provider. And I think... You know what?
I'm going to speak to Bob Lee because I didn't know that
the
he. I didn't know that.
It's not about the feds. This is not about the. No, no. This is not. This is not about the feds.
But some of these things that you're hearing come from them.
No. This is a state. Bob Lee is a county official who's supposed to follow state law. If the feds want to come in and do shit, then they should do so. They can do so with their own troops.
They're doing it all over the state. They've been saying.
Bob Lee's not claiming I'm acting under federal. Now you may be right.
He would never say that.
Right. Now, maybe you're right. I mean, that's, of course, the claim that Richard Quigley, who's an activist who comes on the show occasionally and is dying of cancer and using medical marijuana for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a show every week on KSCO. If you want to hear him, Thursdays from 12 to 2 on 1080 KSCO. But he has said, and I think you're saying, too, that federal grants are one of the reasons that this kind of essentially illegal behavior by the district attorney's office is going on, where individuals are being pursued for selling marijuana. And this is a separate issue. We got two issues here. One is, should the city be regulating and should the community be in arms about what you're saying is profiteering at these two clubs or elsewhere in the county? In the city, actually, mostly, because I don't know, but in the county.
The people that I know, the grassroots,
the second issue, and the one that I'm mentioning here, and I think you agree with me on, is the DA should be using a single standard here, and he shouldn't be requiring that everybody who sells marijuana be a care provider. Now, maybe you agree with him, maybe you don't, but I think there's got to be a place where people go to get marijuana without having formed a Valerie Corral, Wham kind of intimate connection, or even the kind of connection they have with you, which I think is a good connection, the people you provide marijuana for, because some people, when they go to a different city, they need to get marijuana. They got to go in and hand down their card and say, I want to buy some marijuana. And they don't have to be able to say, well, I've had a long relationship with this club in order to get it. I mean, that's ridiculous.
What you're saying...
I would agree
and
with
illegal,
you. I
too.
Agree with
what,
you about that, Robert.
What you're saying is it's a provision of Proposition 215. Is it right there in print?
We have a caller. Let's see what the caller has to say about this. Hi, caller. You're on the air with Anita, Steve, and Robert.
Hi, it's Madison.
Hi, Madison.
Hello, Madison.
I like your discussion. Keep going. But, I mean, it's like Bob Lee's bothering people with marijuana, and then there's the guy over here with the shotgun and 2 kilos of meth, and he was going to let him off because it was a first offense. It's like, wake up, Bob. You're bothering the little hippie homeless ladies with the baskets and dragging them in, and you let these jackasses off? I think he needs to be fired. Keep going. I want to hear some.
Well, I think he needs a good talking to, and I'm going to give Bob a call, and I'm going to speak to Bob because I do have a good rapport with him, and I really
like the neighborhood hasn't dragged his butt down there 900 times, and he positions himself, and then they don't do anything.
Right.
Somebody else probably is after his job. from down below, because then he went and bothered with it this time because somebody complained.
Steve has something.
California prosecutors...
Anyway, I'm going to keep listening. You guys go right ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Excuse me. California prosecutors seem to have forgotten about this mandatory minimum of 10 years for people who use a gun to commit a crime. You see this all the time now. Since our prisons are overcrowded, you see guys get just some of the plea bargains that I've heard of are ridiculous.
You know, Madison, I made a couple of notes that I was going to read off of, and one thing I wanted to say, and I want you to hear it, is I don't want you to underestimate the collective strength of ill people or people who are weakened, because collectively we have a lot of strength and we have a lot of voice. You don't have to have money, although I may be wrong, you probably do need the money, but collectively, together as a group, we speak loudly, we're speaking for human rights, we're speaking for compassion. That's what this whole movement was about in the 80s with Measure A. Then we got 215, now we have SB 240, and who gives a shit if you can't afford it? I'm troubled because I know how much it costs to grow marijuana, and it shouldn't cost a penny more to buy one that's crap and one that's excellent if they've both been grown the same from, or perhaps from different seed. I don't believe in people profiting. Although I've operated Med-X for 11 years, I've lost money on Med-X. I give away. I provide much more than I receive back. And the only thing I really get back is medicine. I happen to smoke a lot of cannabis, and I'm generous with it. But I don't make any money from it. Not a penny, and I don't think anybody should. I didn't even like that Valerie Corral had her bills being paid by donations by WAM.
Valerie Corral of WAM, Women and Men for Medical Marijuana. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio, you're listening to Anita Henry and to Stephen Senko. I'm Robert Norris, and the call-in number, in case you want to jump on board this discussion, is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. You can also review this show later on www.huffsantacruz.org, where the shows are archived. Well, let's finish up with the Lee thing and go to the main issue. I talked to Lee. Lee was initially seemed to be wanting to brush me off, but then he proved that he actually was willing to talk. I talked to him a month and a half before about this issue and said, "What's the deal? How come Mensch is being prosecuted under a standard, according to the documents of your own district attorney Pam Cotto has shown in the preliminary hearing, that says unless you're a care provider, you can't sell marijuana to a patient," which to me is preposterous.
Preposterous.
And not only preposterous, not only wrong, it's illegal. It violates Proposition 215 and SB 420. Why is DA Bob Lee prosecuting Mensch and others under this theory? And I learned that the real answer was he didn't know what his own DAs are doing, and frankly, I don't think he cares. I mean, that is my analysis. Bob's a nice guy. He took 20 minutes to talk in the hallway to a critic, which I give him credit for. But the fact of the matter is, unless we see a change in his policy, there needs to be people up in arms about this issue. I mean, Mensch isn't going to say anything. Mensch's attorney, Ben Rice, isn't going to say anything because they want to keep a kind of low profile, do a kind of quiet deal. They don't want to, you know, stir the waters. They're waiting for a Supreme Court decision that says you don't have to be a care provider to provide this at the Supreme Court level. Why wait for a Supreme Court decision when it's actually part of the law of the land?
And then being a caregiver is open to interpretation anyway.
Right. And also, and if he's going to adopt this view, what gives Milano and, you know, who's the other?
Sampson.
And Sampson's special privileges. And when I asked him this, he said, well, they're licensed by the city. And he says they pay taxes. That's what he said.
I was told last month or 2 months ago that the city of Santa Cruz is committed to never taking a penny of tax on medical marijuana. And when I asked about, I don't remember which city council member it was. I don't remember
well,
which one it was.
Lee claims that they pay taxes.
They do not pay taxes. Ken Sampson's club, the Santa Cruz Patients Collective, charges state tax. Please listen to me.
I'm sorry.
Ken charges state tax if and when the state decides to institute a state
tax. I remember that controversy last year.
There is no city tax. They don't pay a penny.
That brings us really to the next issue, which is, I think people should give a call to DA Bob Lee and demand that he stop
prosecuting people under the theory that you can't sell marijuana to somebody who's a patient unless you're an intimate caregiver with them. I think that would mean every club in the state is illegal. Now, you might feel, as we're going to be talking about in a moment, that every club in the state should be regulated, should be stopped from profiteering. You know, but I don't think you'd say that you want to shut them all down because
I don't want to shut down. I want to be more careful about
who
runs them, who opens them, who staffs them. Are they compassionate? Do they care?
Right. And that's
you know what? The
that's
two
what
that we have right now,
right.
I don't feel that they do.
That's what
I feel.
We're turning to that now.
But Robert, I've actually investigated this fairly well, and I don't think I'm pro law enforcement here, but. Their information that they're getting could be very well be incorrect because there's some rogue elements within the law enforcement.
What information? What do you mean?
The information that they're getting about certain cases.
Well, I'm saying that if he says that a main reason and the papers I read the preliminary hearing claim that they are going after Mensch on the theory that care providers are only valid, the only valid people who can provide medical marijuana to patients, that's just simply not in accord with the law. So I don't understand what he's doing, except maybe he's trying to use a very, very peculiarly limited interpretation of the law. And to do this in Santa Cruz County,
that's a gray area.
Seems bizarre. You know, I don't know if it's a gray area. I think to me it's pretty black and white. Yeah. Santa Cruz County was the first county, or the second after San Francisco, that passed a measure that said
Measure A, and that
right.
was in the 80s.
And by a huge margin, 215, and then SB 420 came in from the state legislature. So what the fuck is Lee doing? I mean, I don't think the federal dollars are that golden that he should do this. And I told him so, not in his, shall we say, outspoken terminology that I use here on the radio, but he knows how I feel about it. And I told him I wasn't going to pull any punches on this. I don't think we should either. I probably should give out his phone number if you can call him, but I don't think you can call after hours. I know if you try to call the Board of Supervisors after hours, you don't even get an answering machine. By the way, if you see these lights start flickering, it means we have phone calls. And if I don't notice them...
We have a couple of phone calls.
Can I add something real quick here?
Oh, they stopped.
Yeah.
Okay.
Call again. Here we go. 427-3772. Steve, go ahead.
Okay. The one of the things here that's been a problem is what I call these rogue elements, and they are members that are involved in law enforcement. They don't believe as we do.
Let me take this call and we'll talk about that. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi.
Greetings. What's your name, caller?
Bruce.
Hey, Bruce.
Probably the question for Steve.
Yeah. Huh?
Is I see. I'm naive.
Yeah.
I was listening to the radio.
This voice sounds familiar. Is this my good friend?
Turn it down. Turn down your radio.
The question is simple. The law, I think, doesn't it require that the people dispensing be a cooperative or nonprofit? And in that case, would the DA be appropriate? And perhaps even these dispensaries be illegal? Under California law, since they're making a profit, I think Steve mentioned he was familiar with the letter of the law.
Go ahead,
and
Steve.
I'll listen to the answer after I hang up.
Thanks, Bruce.
Bye.
Go ahead,
good
Steve.
To hear your voice, Bruce.
Very interesting question here because I myself question the validity of these dispensaries and this huge profit margin. But we're going to have to get into that as time goes on here during this interview, because the fact is now we have a whole different dynamics in the cannabis, should I say, industry, because you have the medicinal dispensaries, you have the black market, which I'm not familiar with at all, and it's just a whole different thing. And then now you have the grassroots movement. Not anybody that I know that's chronically ill or seriously ill can afford to go into these dispensaries because they go without food if they buy their products. Now you go out and this grassroots movement is a strong attempt to follow the letter of the law. Bartering is very common. At this rate, the same quality of cannabis and cannabis products that we're seeing in these dispensaries are about $250 to $275 an ounce in barter worth, and that's mostly the what patients themselves grow over their allotted 3 pounds is what they use to barter with. This works out great. The prices have been kept low. It's sick to see the prices at the dispensary.
So that's turned to that now, because that really is why you two came to talk about your concern about local profiteering as you see it at the clubs. Now, I got to say, I have not done any independent research on this. I've had Lisa Milano on the show repeatedly before she got her permit. And, she, you know, I was a big ally of hers. I wanted to see this Rotkin stop his 5-year moratorium on clubs, or moratorium essentially.
I was an advocate for her also, because she made a lot of promises to this city, Robert, that she hasn't fulfilled yet.
Yeah, he told me he wanted to have as many clubs as possible to encourage price wars.
He likes to say things like that.
That's what he told me also. But you know what?
It was his law that essentially kept clubs closed for 5 years from 2000 to 2005.
What's really confusing to me and most troubling to me is our city council. I want to know what their intent and the implications were, what they thought they were, of allowing these dispensaries to open in 2006. Now, the city council and the board of supervisors stood behind Valerie Corral and WAM because they used WAM as a model. It was elevated because it was run by and for patients who were seriously ill and by donation. Now, it wasn't free. It can't be free. So you gave what you could give. But now Valerie has opened up a hospice house. Valerie fucking walks the walk and talks the talk. I've come on here and I've criticized her. I've been critical of her. But I want to tell you something. When I started MedX to follow in Valerie's footsteps. I thought it was a compassionate, loving, caring thing to do.
Hold it there for a minute, Anita. We have a caller calling in. What's your name? You're on the air.
Oh, it's Madison Roberts. So clubs means marijuana clubs, not booze clubs, right? Or is it all of it?
No, that means marijuana clubs. But Madison, we're in the middle of this, so okay. Go ahead. So you were saying before.
I was saying before. What was I saying? Yeah, I'm troubled because these are seriously ill people we're talking about. I don't want profit, and the new dispensaries are businesses and exploitive. They're price gouging, and at this time, I want to put out a challenge to Lisa and Ken to both come on this show with me, and let's talk about prices. Let's talk about how much it costs to grow. Let's talk about what you're paying your growers. Let's talk about what, you know, your needs are and how you're salarying yourself, how you're being benefited by, and you're not even ill. I mean, you walk into Ken's club and he's got 3 young, beautiful blonde girls behind the counter. I was just in there the other day. It fucking pissed me off with a huge wooden carved sign about 12 feet long that says, "Don't panic, it's organic." I want to know how he can have 15 kinds of organic herb. I guess we'll take his word for it and pay the $65
an
eighth.
Maybe he has a lab in the back with gas chromatography.
You know, I did invite Lisa Milano on the air. And
I'm challenging her to come on.
And I called her earlier today about I guess, around noon and suggested she might want to come on the air and respond.
Well, hopefully she's listening.
And I got her cell phone. Maybe I have an old number that doesn't get through to her, but I have left her messages on occasion at her place of business.
So have I.
And I have not gotten, I haven't gotten a call back or a message back in
Neither
eight
have
months,
I.
You know, so.
Robert, I really wouldn't feel like comfortable speaking to her right now. My experience is, once I joined Greenway, the first time I went in there, I went and bought a certain type of cannabis, and that wasn't what I bought. And I went back and I said something about it.
I mean, it was sold to you as cannabis, and it turned out to be oregano?
No, it turned out to be something not as – the quality was not as near as what is how it was.
And they had a name on it, which it was not.
And okay. I went without food that month because I went down there. I had to out of necessity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was kind of upset, and – they gave me the stink eye that gave me the feeling that, you know, don't say anything else.
And did they give you what you wanted? Or
no.
Did you tell them the problem?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
what did they say? They say
brought out their taster who showed me 2 different types of what he said was the same thing when there's only 1 type of this hybrid. And I just gave up and left on it because I didn't want to cause a problem.
Uh-huh.
And
they're not experienced. They're young, healthy people that are working at these dispensaries.
And
they don't have the information about indicas, and I mean, they'll tell you that they do,
different
but how can they?
Cannabis, right? So, indicas, sativas. But see, now I met Lisa before she opened the place.
So did I. Yeah.
And I talked to her, and she talked about compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And on the very back page, she has part of the law written in 215, where it explains I mean, I can bring it out and show it to you where it explains that people who are seriously ill have access to medicinal marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And it contradicts the first page.
I just want to know where the compassion is. My experience, when I went and registered for that club, because on occasion I like to get something different. And I went in there one day and I bought probably about $120 I spent on a bag of herb, and I really liked it. It was good. So I went back about 4 days later to get some more, and I bought some more. And when I got home, it wasn't the same thing. And when I went back there, they started to argue with me and try to make it seem like it was my fault. I'm also having another very interesting thing going on right now. The Oaksterdam News, I don't know if people are familiar with this newspaper.
This is important.
It's got a circulation of 70,000 in California, and it comes out seasonally, fall, winter, summer, and spring. And MedX has always been listed in the back as a delivery service with a phone number. And for some reason, a couple of months ago, they put the paper out with my home address and my apartment number. And I have had people coming to my house. I called the Oaksterdam News, of which Chris Conrad is the executive editor. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with his name. He's very important, and he's an author. And he just said, I'm sorry, why don't you just black out your address, which totally, I couldn't believe that was his response to me. They assured me, I spoke to several other people at the paper, and they assured me that they contacted the dispensaries and the head shops.
Excuse me. If I was your attorney, I'd advise you.
Please do not interrupt me. Please do not interrupt me. I spoke to several people at the Oaksterdam News, and they assured me that all the copies that were sent to the dispensaries and the head shops, and myself included, I get 4 boxes, 100 in a box, that's 400 that each place gets, that they would all be pulled. Okay, I took his word for it, and I figured, you know, I'm going to wait a week or two. Well, my son called me about 2 weeks ago, and he said, I just left Grassroots, and I confiscated 2 dozen copies of the paper. They still had them out. I said, oh, with my name, and
We should say, you've talked about this on the air before, but maybe new listeners don't know. You have personally been, you've had your home invaded.
My son was bound and beat with a gun, and then I've been burglarized. I'm a past middle-aged woman who is ill, who just wants to make my own cannabis because I can't grow it. So I try to pass it along to other ill people. I'm a social worker. I have 2 master's degrees. I am entitled to pass along marijuana to other ill people.
Her home invasion led to a shootout with police, which was very...
But that has nothing to do with this.
But it's very important.
The damage is done. The damage is done. The point I want to make is the head shops and the dispensaries gave their word to the Oaksterdam News that they understood the seriousness of this, the danger
the
it placed me in,
we're talking about.
And that they would pull them. Both Greenway and Ken Sampson and the head shops agreed to immediately pull
Did
all
any of
their...
them do that?
I fucking went and picked up every box. My car is loaded. My trunk is full. I have a call in to Ben Rice. I don't know what can really be done because the information is out there. All I know now is I've got 16 boxes, 100 in a box. About 400 copies have been handed out in Santa Cruz County. So I don't know whether I have a lawsuit against the Oaksterdam News. I don't know whether I'm more pissed at the dispensaries for not pulling the papers when they said they would. I went into the dispensaries Monday, as a matter of fact, just this past Monday, and picked up 3 boxes from Grassroots, 3 boxes from Ken's Club, which I will say they did have them locked in a closet. But when I went to Greenway, they were still distributing them and then tried to deny they even had them. And it wasn't until I blew a shit fit that someone said, oh, I think I know what you're talking about, and then came out with 2.5 boxes. That means they handed out 150. As I was getting ready to leave, they accused me of having my son going in there using a credit card illegally to buy medicine, which was so funny to me, how they were going to try to make me the bad guy. Fortunately, my son was in the car because he was going to carry the boxes.
You mean they claimed that he'd previously come in?
That he had previously been going to the dispensary and, you know, with a credit card. And I said, not my boy. And I said, let me go out to my car, because my son was in my car. And my son came in and said, what are you talking about? And they said, oh. They didn't know. These people have no integrity. I challenge these people that are running this club, that are hiring this staff, that are promoting the medicine at these prices, to come into this station and answer the questions, or give the answers to the questions that I've been asking for years. I've been doing Medx 11 years. You both just came to town. You both just discovered the healing medicinal qualities, but yet you're living well.
The bottom line goes back to profiteering. Oaksterdam News has a wide circulation because they're Central California's most popular medicinal cannabis newspaper.
Have you found out whether it's been removed online, by the way?
Their site is down, so I'm assuming that you can get on their site. But if you get on, it's down. So I'm assuming they're altering their site. But the point is, 70,000 of these papers are out.
The damage has been done.
And if you look at the front page, there's no way somebody's not going to pick this paper up. Let me turn to the front page.
They offered her security. That was it.
Who offered Anita security?
The Amsterdam News. When I called them up and said, what the hell have you... Oaksterdam News. I said, what the hell have you done? Oh, I took the front page. Oh, here it is. I said, what the hell have you done? I have people knocking at my door. He said, well, if you want, we can give you some security. And I said, what the hell are you going to do? Sit on my front, you know, my little patio? I live in a little baby one-bedroom HUD housing apartment. How are they going to give me security?
Well, they could send around some Secret Service guys to
they
keep an eye on
you. They can't do shit. The damage is done. There's stoners up there. You don't publish a paper with someone's personal information when you know this is a very dangerous thing that we're doing. We are putting our lives at risk. My son and daughter could have been killed by the men that kicked in the door and beat my son and bound both my children.
When did that happen?
That happened in 1998. And it was in the paper for several days. Mm-hmm. And these,
it was heavy.
There was a shootout with the police. The fucking DA let the people out on bail. They jumped bail. They've never been caught. After that, 4 years later, I was burglarized in my home. I am a woman on my own, past middle age, ill, trying to do a good thing. And I'm disgusted with the culture. And I'm disgusted with the city council. And I'm fed up with the dispensaries.
We're going to take a brief breather and give you folks out there from the culture who are perhaps users of the dispensaries or perhaps not. Maybe you've had some concerns about these two clubs. Maybe you think Anita is full of it.
Overdoing it.
Yeah, maybe she's exaggerating. I've known Anita for a while, and I...
She's a very intelligent woman.
And I think I have a lot of respect for the concerns she raises, and I know that also Anita's been a supporter of Lisa Milano's getting a club. And
I tried to get to know this woman. She has never called me back.
And I know I also, Lisa, again, even from my perspective, has not been willing to get back to us. I don't know what the situation is. Maybe there's some unusual factor. If anybody has any new information on this, please give a call. 427-3772, 427-FRSE, and give a call.
We've got a situation, and it calls for a solution that upholds our domination of the planet. We're gonna make our case, and we're gonna make it well. And if you don't like our logic, you can can it. We'll use impeccable intelligence from any country in the world, as long as we all see eye to eye. And if we don't find quite what we need, we know what to do. Just look into the camera and lie. It's Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation. O-I-L. We'll lie about the missiles and the nuclear research. We'll lie about uranium. We'll build military bases and smile for reporters as we give away bubble gum. We'll lie about Bin Laden, his connections with the Saudis. We'll lie about 9-1-1. We'll lie about the Basis, their connections to Al-Qaeda, because we know there's none. It's Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation, O-I-L. We'll lie about the North Koreans and we'll lie about Iran. And don't mention Israel. Keep those nuclear weapons out of this song. And we'll all get together swell. And we'll liberate these people. We'll liberate their money. We'll liberate their soil. We'll liberate their airports, we'll liberate their harbors, and we'll liberate their oil. It's Operation Iraqi Liberation. Tell me, what does that spell? Operation Iraqi Liberation.
We're back on the air. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio with me, Anita Henry, Steve Senko, and a roving bandadier, scope it out, Scott Graham, a mechanic at large, an occasional marijuana user. Have you been medicating yourself again, Scott? What's going on? Are you a stoner head?
Well, no. I actually have been drug-free for the last 5 years, even though it's not really...
Cannabis isn't a drug.
Well, whatever. I mean, it's
an herb.
Medicine free, whatever you want to call it. But the point I wanted to make here was about profiteering. And that there are two clubs in town, and maybe more, that are making huge profits off of this medicine, where they're claiming to be doing things for the good of the public and the good of the people that need this medicine. And they're, in fact, charging either street prices or higher. And they're getting a lot of their product donated to them. So anyway, somebody that I know is a personal friend of their attorney's. And their attorney told this person that I know, if you would like to get into a business here in Santa Cruz and make $1 million a year, the thing to do is open a dispensary. Because two of the people that I helped open dispensaries are going to probably make $1 million profit this year. And
That's so sad.
So I think that, you know, the idea that there's profiteering going on here is very real.
I've got a question for you, Scott. Actually, the whole panel here. Has the fact that marijuana is dispensaries have opened cut back the street market at all? In other words, is it... I've heard claimed that because marijuana has been cut back on the streets, there's more meth and other hard drugs being sold because people can't make a profit off marijuana because other people go to the clubs instead.
Not true. Meth is a whole new monster.
It's always been an epidemic.
Okay. It's always been there, and it's there.
So much for my theory.
Since the internet put on these recipes, I knew it was going to blow up,
okay.
And it's sad what's done.
And Steve, Scott, what do you think?
Plus also the fact that it used to be... majority of the meth came from motorcycle gangs, which is no longer true. Now it's the Mexican mob that's making it. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to worry about the fact that they can't get the main ingredients here in the U.S. because they get it in Mexico where, mm-hmm. you know, you can get almost any drug over the counter. You don't have to
fill out forms
or anything. You know, I mean, you can get... You know, Dilaudid, and you can get all this stuff without a prescription in Mexico.
Going back to marijuana again, earlier in the show, Anita and Steve have suggested that it might be good to find some way, and I'm sure if you did, Steve, but I know you did, of getting the city council to regulate the prices of marijuana. I'm not familiar with whether cities have that kind of power or whether
we're not talking about a clothing shop or lingerie or coffee. We're talking about sick people and
right,
medicine.
But can
we're not talking
right,
about
Anita,
the city gave them permission.
I'm turning down your mics because I want to say that can they regulate pharmaceuticals in town? I mean, I don't think they can.
Well, pharmaceuticals didn't go to the city council for permission to open. These dispensaries did, and the city gave them permission based on the WAM model.
Right.
But they gave them carte blanche.
Well, let me put it this way. I think that, you know, pharmacies as well as marijuana clubs have to follow city law in opening. It's just that the city law is more restrictive regarding medical marijuana distribution centers. Again, the law I mentioned with respect to the, I call it the Rotkin sugar law that passed in 2000. Sugar was the mayor at the time.
Well, Mike Rotkin changes his opinion about as many times as there is days in a month, in a week, you know.
Well, I have to say that in 2000...
Depends on what side of his mouth he's talking.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to hear these attacks on our fine council member Rotkin without him being here.
You mean the shadow mayor Rotkin?
Shadow mayor Rotkin. Actually, yes, a very powerful man on the city council. In fact, Rotkin did help Lisa Molyneux open up her club by essentially making an exception to the was it the 600 foot or the 500 foot from a playground or from a children's center rule that was put in that put most areas out of bounds in Santa Cruz for clubs. That's why I said that the Rotkin law criminalized clubs in the downtown. It would have criminalized, for example, the Maple Street Club. They closed down the club across from the Metro that opened up for a brief time in 2006, you may remember.
But yet they allowed a dispensary to stay in business on Portola Drive. On the east side.
That was William.
Yeah.
You remember William?
Is he outside the city limits?
I think he's in Watsonville now.
I don't know. I call him William the convict because he threatened me.
It's outside. So we're talking about the city. And again, the issue here is, you know, they can't tell pharmacies what prices to sell, I don't think. So how could they tell cannabis
because
clubs?
Because pharmacies are corporations and they're regulated by the government. These dispensaries were given permission by our local city council.
But they were created by the state, too. These are nonprofit corporations.
But they listen to us. The city council listened to the people.
I guess in theory they could say we will allow no marijuana clubs unless you're
affordable.
They got to regulate the profit margin.
What I'm saying is...
The thing is that already in the state of California, in most states, it's illegal to price gouge.
Right.
Which means profiteering is price gouging.
Good point.
So if they're making over a certain amount above and beyond their cost,
it's around 200%.
Then they're price gouging.
And they are not paying city tax, Robert, and I want you to think about that. How much money could be going to help the city, people in the city, people on the street?
Our main emphasis is on a tax base. We've always needed a tax base. We expect it because they use it for tobacco, they use it for alcohol, now for cannabis, even medical
cannabis. You're proposing, I got three different ideas coming out of this. One is that there be regulation of cannabis specifically in terms of profits. The second is the profiteering laws or price gouging laws, if they exist, or I'm not sure how they exist. I've never heard of anybody being prosecuted for price gouging in this county for anything. I'm sure there are plenty of price gougers around. So, I mean, maybe
only time there was actually even threats of it was right after the earthquake when there was price gouging going on by just regular stores with batteries and such.
Gasoline.
We're fortunate to be here because it's a corporate country. We're fortunate to be in Santa Cruz County.
Speak for yourself. But in any case, and the third thing would be a law against price gouging. I guess you could claim that because of the nature of the herb, because it's so closely regulated, that you could add another provision that there shall be a special city commission that would oversee prices.
I would
prices.
Love to see that. I would. Because we want to talk about how much does
course,
it cost to
of
produce
course,
the
Of course, all the
product.
Libertarians right. would jump up and say that's government intervention and the. I don't know what they would say. What would you say, Scott, about that? Are you a libertarian? I don't know what you are. What would you be your view on that?
Well, myself, I would rather see as little government interference as possible. But if these people are in business just to be profiteers, then either their customers should revolt and stand outside and protest, or there should be some sort of not necessarily government intervention, but some sort of commission set up that will oversee pricing. And then these people will have to report their incomes, not necessarily to the state or to the city, but to this appointed commission, either appointed by the county or the city, that will oversee whether or not they're unnecessarily profiting from
it. Well,
it
sounds like the first thing to do might be some direct action. If you get enough people interested in this, Anita, and we could put out a call here for those who want to contact you, or you can call the Huff line and leave a message if you prefer not to be called at home, or we could give you the give
well, out
a home number.
Well, didn't I say I don't want to underestimate the collective strength of ill people?
Uh-huh.
Exactly. Go,
I don't want to underestimate.
So do you want to call for people to get in touch with you and maybe do a protest?
I would love to do that. If people are interested in getting involved, please call me, leave a message, leave your name and phone number. I promise I'll call you back. You can reach me at 425-3444. We really need to do something about what's going on.
No.
Give that number again.
425-3444.
Now, I'm just thinking that, just a second, Steve. You know, we at Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, often do little protests in front of stores. That, for example, when Borders started selling Bum Fights, the video shows homeless people beating up each other and torture of homeless people and so forth. And we urge customers to be aware of this. Some of us didn't like the idea of censoring Borders, heavens forfend. Others just wanted to publicize it. But there was a protest. Similarly, when Pacific Trading Company colluded with the police department to take away seating space downtown at a cost of, I don't know, $5,000 with police department money, mind you, we did protest in front of Pacific Trading Company. Of course, they hauled us away politically for that, but that's another matter. I mean, I think you could do protests, you know, in which you could actually set up a table outside these clubs and sign people up. Have you been profiteered? Of course, they might be a little nervous about signing up right next to the club because they might feel that their buying privileges would be revoked.
Absolutely.
They'd be afraid to get thrown out.
That's what would happen.
Another possibility would be to do a Huff and Puff. You may remember the Huff and Puff project.
I do.
In which there were no clubs open. We started distributing marijuana on the sidewalk, or actually began that process. We had some marijuana on the table, and we had a care provider, but we didn't actually get very far with it. You could set up a little table yourself and say, you could undercut their prices and say, you know, how much did it cost you inside? We believe it should, and have a sort of a statement of principles, express the concerns
you know, if
you have.
I had the energy and the stamina, Robert, it sounds like a fun idea.
Right.
But I don't think something
maybe
like
somebody else
work.
Will.
These people aren't going to lose customers. Because people can go in there, you know, ask for a handout on the street, get $20, and go buy a gram and be happy to smoke a gram. They have people in there that are healthy enough to go to work. People who could pay the $150 to get a doctor's letter that walk in just looking fine. I've been in both dispensaries several times. They all look fine to me. I don't see any sick people in there. I'm sure they have some. I'm sure they must be hidden disabilities.
The sickest can't afford it.
Well, I think that in order to do this kind of grassroots protest, you'd need to do some organizing. That could be done by phone if enough people are interested. We haven't had a great flood of phone calls, or maybe I haven't been noticing the phone lines.
I haven't been looking, but I am serious, Robert. If people are interested in getting involved in this grassroots movement to bring things back to the way they used to be, I mean, even at the club on Maple Street in 1996, 11 years ago, Good Bud was only $50.
And if you couldn't afford it, Fred would give you
a quarter ounce of nice. And I have heard a story or two that Lisa has given a little bit of shake or two people. Well, wasn't that altruistic and nice of her?
I think she regularly gives it out to Craig Canada. She has some.
We have one or two people, but it's an arbitrary decision, Robert. That's not equality.
You know, Robert, I need to make an important.
Was Fred equal, or did he give it out to one or two people?
No,
too,
Fred
or?
Was
no,
great.
Gave it to several
he
people.
Gave it to many people who couldn't afford it because their checks hadn't come in.
Well, I'd love to have. I know I'd love to hear the other side of this, but I can't seem to get a call back from Lisa Milano. So Lisa, call home here and give us your side before we have to presume that your silence may indicate consent, in which case.
And that
it's
goes
not so
for
good.
Ken. That goes for Ken Sampson also, whose club is more expensive.
Now, Robert, I need to make a very important point here. Now, the reason I talk about a tax base is there were studies done before our deficit got up in the trillions by NORML, the National Organization for Reform of Marijuana Laws, to where our deficit could have been eliminated by ending prohibition. And taxation through buying it, well, that was all done. Now, the fact is, we need to have a tax base because California grows the best cannabis in the world. It's a known fact.
Agreed.
And some of the most.
And Santa Cruz County does.
It's actually the headline on the Oaksterdam News.
It's a very well-known secret. Supposedly,
America's number one cash crop is cannabis.
I think the argument you're making is, the city can get some money from this if they wanted to tax these clubs.
Right, the city, county, and state.
and that they wouldn't it wouldn't really interfere with the business of these folks.
No.
That's exactly
and
how I feel. I want to see the money go to the city to help the people
exactly.
in the programs that have been cut year after year.
Right.
Robert, you're more familiar
but
than
Scott,
anybody.
Wouldn't this mean more money for Dick Wilson and the general fund? I mean, how can
well,
you support
that's
such
a real problem?
More funds for
the
law
money
enforcement
has to
even.
Go to the most vulnerable.
Whoever needs it, the schools.
The
need
most
it.
Vulnerable.
Well, I mean, that's the problem. Is that last election, the citizens of Santa Cruz were duped into this tax measure of taxing themselves forever at a quarter cent when they go and purchase things, supposedly to fix the roads.
Don't they?
Well,
crazy?
It turns out that actually 60% of that money is going to the police. Another 20% is going to Parks and Rec for two new Rangers.
Three new Rangers. And four CSOs.
But they buffaloed
And for some reason, something like between 6 and 8% of that money is actually going to go to fix roads.
That was 19%, but maybe not.
No, it's not.
But in any case, your point is you can't.
It's under 10%.
The point is
it's going to fix
roads. So I really threw this in as kind of a wild card because, I mean, you know.
And so I don't trust, you know, the powers that be in this city to.
We need an oversight, but we need an oversight committee. That's what I mean.
I'm sorry, that would violate the city charter. We can't do that. It's being thrown out. We'll be talking about that next on Free Radio. Call in if you'd like, 427-3772. And here's another musical break while we have a little arguing among ourselves.
Boy president, but he wears a black hat. In America, can't get away with that. On the eve of destruction again, and he's got the knack. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. He come into town with a chip on his shoulder. His cowboy boots made him feel tall. He said, by proclamation, now there's a new order, and I am the fiercest leader of all. He wore a pair of six shooters, a Bowie knife and a rifle, and a Derringer stashed in his boot. Said, y'all drop your weapons, I'm here to disarm you. Don't give me a reason to shoot. Everyone protested, they all turned against him. Said, just who do you think you are? He said, many are good, but many are evil, and I am the Avatar. They all drew and fired, E.L. Condoleezza. If you're with me, then blast them to hell. She came riding side saddle, shouting out orders and twirling two pistols remarkably well. When it was over, there's nothing left standing, nothing moving, nothing to say. They drove the prisoners east to the boats for their hanging, from the gallows overlooking Guantanamo Bay. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. In old America, you'd never get away with that. With an ego the size of Texas and his brand on Iraq, he's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat.
Okay, we're back, and Cowboy President, and that was from the album Hush Up, Everybody. We're on the air, for heaven's sake. And that was from the album Election Day USA, one of my old favorites. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm your master of ceremonies, Robert Norse. In the studio with me, we have Steve, Anita, and Scott. And we're turning now, although we're not going to leave the subject entirely of local profiteering. We keep hoping that... I've also invited Ben Rice, who's... the attorney for Roger Manchin, I believe also might have been Lisa Molyneux's attorney, too, at one point. And also, he's been an activist concerned with medical marijuana and other marijuana cases. I informed him we're having this show and that invited him to call in, not so much on the issue of profiteering as on the issue of why is DA Bob Lee prosecuting people in the county but not in the city for essentially doing the same thing, providing medical marijuana at above cost but not clearly at any profiteering stuff. Although, I mean, let me put this way. The issue is, well, we've heard claims here that there is profiteering going on locally. So what we got coming up next here is something I announced at the beginning of the show, which is we're going to be replaying and talking about the City Council's agenda item on Measure K. Measure K, as you may know, and you may have voted for or against, probably for, 63% of the people in the city did. It makes marijuana, recreational marijuana, used by adults in private, as well as sales and a possession, the lowest priority, supposedly, for our police, requires the city to send in a statement to the governor or different officials on this issue, and makes it the policy of the city that marijuana be as quickly decriminalized so it can be taxed and regulated, so it can become a basis for revenue for the city and for, use, both recreational and medical, without this incredible atmosphere of paranoia and police apparatus that's, plagued us for the last 70 years. And that, that's an issue that maybe reached the state ballot, in 2008, because it's passed cities like Santa Barbara, Oakland, Santa Cruz, West Hollywood, other places. So the issue reached the Santa Cruz City Council, not because the Santa Cruz City Council wanted to do anything about it. They refused to consider it, put it on the ballot, themselves. They refused to pass it themselves, which they could have done independently, but chose not to. Instead, it passed by the voters without even a recommendation from the city council. In fact, the city attorney weighed in against it and started raising caveats last summer. More recently, the city attorney has gone to court behind the backs of the citizenry after a meeting in closed session. I mean, they told us they were doing this, but they provided no opportunity for public discussion or input. And they asked that the guts of the measure be ripped away. That is to say, the Oversight Commission be told that it was violating the city charter because you're not allowed to request reports from the police department because that should go through the city manager. As though that were some major defect in the ordinance. We heard all kinds of you'll hear stern things from the city council, but I'm going to start playing this now. If it gets too tedious and boring, we'll have Anita and Scott will sing a duet while this goes on.
Or you'll call in.
Or hopefully you'll call in. 427-3772.
Give us your feedback.
To direct the city manager to establish the Measure K Oversight Committee and structure it to meet monthly for the first 3 months in order to implement Chapter 9.84 of the Santa Cruz Municipal Code, Ordinance Number 2006-27, and then to meet semi-annually thereafter. Mr. Bernal?
Just a brief overview. Martin Bernal, Assistant City Manager. The purpose of the item today is twofold. One is just to provide you a very brief update on the implementation of Measure K, which is the adult marijuana criminal offenses lowest law enforcement priority ballot measure that passed this past November. And two, to get direction from council with respect to the structure of the oversight committee, which is a requirement of the ordinance. As you mentioned, the ordinance has been codified as Chapter 9.84 of the Santa Cruz Municipal Code and is currently in effect. That has three major requirements, and I'll just review those really briefly. Attached to your agenda report is the full text of the ordinance for your reference. The first aspect relates to the police department lowest law enforcement priority policy, and it requires that the police department make adult, that's 18 or older, criminal marijuana investigations, citations, arrests, property seizures, and prosecutions its lowest law enforcement priority, and stipulates that the law enforcement activity related to all other criminal offenses shall receive a higher priority. It also includes some exemptions to that, exceptions to that, distribution or sale of marijuana to minors, distribution, sale, cultivation, or use of marijuana on public property, or driving under the influence. And so what we wanted to point out is that with respect to this provision of the ordinance, it appears that we are in compliance, and that is reflected by the statistics that have been provided by the police department, and we have 2 years' worth of statistics in the staff report for 2005 and 2006. And I'll just quickly highlight the 2006 as was the most recent statistics. For the year 2000, calendar year 2006, the police department received 68,000 calls for service and issued 13,404 citations. Of the total number of citations, 214 were for marijuana-related offenses, which is represents 1.6% of the 214 marijuana-related offenses. 213 fell within the exemption categories or happened in the commission of another crime, so they weren't applicable to Measure K, and one was applicable to Measure K, and that represents 0.01% of all citations. So that clearly demonstrates that it's a very, very, very low priority for the police department. The second requirement of the ordinance is that notification.
And I'm going to pause here briefly, do a little commentary. This is the assistant city attorney giving the rap by the staff on how they don't really need the ordinance. The report fundamentally says three things. We don't need the ordinance because the police are doing this already, only 0.001%, you know, that sort of thing. I'm not giving the exact figure. Are, you know, in violation according to the police department stats. Well, the ordinance allows for the responsibilities of the oversight committee allow for five things. They're going to keep an eye on the police department. They're going to receive grievances from any individuals who believe they were had problems. And so that's something right now all such grievances go to the police department or theoretically to the police auditor who hasn't been seen once a year when he comes in and makes a verbal report to the city council on what happens.
Came in once a year and picked up a paycheck.
Yeah, I think he picks up a paycheck more frequently than that. But that's Bob Aronson, who is out of Palo Alto and who used to be the independent attorney for the Citizens Police Review Board when we had a Citizens Police Review Board. He replaced the board. It's sort of like replacing citizens with a lawyer beholden to the city for his salary. It's an interesting change and a very telling one. They're all supposed to design a supplemental report form for Santa Cruz law enforcement officers, which I think was a waste of time. Not because I just used the form that was around in other cities, but fine. Then they're supposed to, this is the area that where they claim it's unconstitutional, the city attorney claims it, request additional information from any Santa Cruz law enforcement officer who engaged in law enforcement activity relating to one or more marijuana offenses under circumstances which appear to violate the lowest law enforcement priority policy. An officer's decision not to provide additional information shall not be grounds for discipline. This is all part of the code that's been presented. So it's a very weak, mellow, mild provision that's kind of setting the stage for a state initiative that overturns the criminalization of marijuana at the next state election, and also, you know, it tries to gather some, give people, empower people locally who, where if the police are not following the rules.
Robert, that completely contradicts the California Law Enforcement Association. They completely support medical cannabis.
Okay, we're not talking about medical cannabis. We're talking about recreational marijuana. This is marijuana of any kind we're talking about.
Okay, now, in the future,
we're talking right now about a law passed in Santa Cruz around around recreational marijuana.
Good.
And wait a minute. We're in the middle of a discussion of what the Oversight Committee is doing, and what the city manager and what the city attorney are really trying to do here is to head off this Oversight Committee. They've already gone to court, even before going to this. This matter comes up before the public only because the law that was passed by the voters requires them to appoint a committee. And so they've opened up this, and the city managers, what they're going to try to have it meet as infrequently as possible. I think they're going to have it meet four times a year. They're going to claim it costs $50,000 out of the budget for four meetings.
Whoa. Who would be on the committee?
A city council member appoints a member. Each member of the city council appoints a member.
That's interesting to hear this, because about the time that they made it legal for women to go topless in town, there was a law passed that made it legal to smoke cannabis openly in town. I don't know if that's still on the
I haven't seen such a law, and I
that
never
knew. No, really
no.
Obscure,
well, you'll find it for me because I don't think it ever was passed.
No, it
I
was
never,
a protest. I don't think there was any law.
No law.
That gave them
Scott,
permission.
You had something you wanted to say?
Well, that completely distracted me.
Yeah, Steve.
Did you picture that?
Watch
one?
It. Watch it. Okay, we're going to continue now with the, again, this is the assistant city attorney, a city manager's sort of.
Martin
Bernal, but what he's doing, he's kind of giving this soporific patter that is going to put you to sleep so that everybody will say, oh, yeah, okay, let's go on to the next agenda item. And in essence, what they're, you know, they have to put this on the agenda. What they're doing is they're just saying, the voters told us we have to get a commission together, so we're going to make it the smallest possible commission. We're going to complain as loudly as we can about the budget, and then we're going to go to court and try to stop it from even happening. That's what's happening here.
Provided to the federal and state officials, and the city clerk's office is putting that together, and will be sending a notification shortly if they haven't already. The third is, and this one relates to the recommendation before you today, is the Measure K Oversight Committee. The ordinance requires the formation of an oversight committee within 100 days of the effect of the ordinance, and this goes into effect in early March. This is the part of the ordinance that's the most difficult to implement for a couple of reasons. First, it requires a dedication of staff resources to support the work and produce the required reports, so we will have to mobilize staff resources to do that, both in this case, the city manager's office and the police department. Also, there are the city attorney has advised that there's provisions of the work that is dictated for the oversight committee that is in conflict with state law and the city's charter, and the city attorney at the council direction has filed a declaratory relief lawsuit in order to obtain a court ruling on these apparent conflicts. So those questions will have to will not be able to be immediately addressed in the work of the committee. And it's important to resolve these questions in as much as they could provide for a misdemeanor violation for a public official to violate the city charter, and that would include a member of the committee.
This is, of course, horseshit, the idea that the committee would be getting misdemeanor violations if they violate the charter. I mean, if they ask the police department for information about, if there's a complaint, let's say, that an officer is not making marijuana enforcement in private by adults the lowest priority, they're required to, they can say, oh, we'll ask, you know, ask the city manager to ask the police about this. That's all they need to do. They just have to ask the city manager to ask the police. And the idea that this is going to subject them to criminal penalties would only be the case if they grabbed the police officer and said, you tell us directly, or they tried to direct the police officer. Actually, any citizen can ask a police officer any question they want. And it's already stated in this measure, the police officer doesn't have to comply. So this is a complete red herring, as far as I'm concerned. I'm surprised that, you know, we have nobody who's defending this measure because...
You know, Robert, I don't think many
We have nobody defending it because the people who passed it, Andrea Tischler, the Compassion Flower Inn, has left. The Compassion Flower Inn is
deserted.
Compassion Flower Inn is closed, and so it's not. The people who actually acted on this, Karen Horner from out of town, is who's been on this show talking about how ridiculous this challenge is in San Francisco, and so she's not around. And all you've got are the occasional gadfly like me, you know, and I've got 43 other issues I'm also balancing on my nose. So, you know, if people want to keep this law in force, they're going to have to kick a little ass. I suggest you contact the city council at 420-5020 and tell them stop trying to subvert the law, and also to call you back on what's going on here. I notice also what is not mentioned, and you'll see, and I didn't mention it at city council because I didn't think about it at the time. There's a provision of this law that also states the lowest priority policy shall apply to cooperating with state or federal agents to arrest, cite, investigate, prosecute, or seize property from adults for marijuana offenses, included in the lowest law enforcement priority policy. Santa Cruz law enforcement officers and other city employees shall not accept or renew formal deputization or commissioning by a federal law enforcement agency if such deputization or commissioning will include investigating, citing, arresting, or seizing property from adults for marijuana. This, we never got any information from Martine how much this has happened or not happened. You know, she said, oh, there's been none of the, there hasn't been much private use marijuana police getting involved in that. He did not address this other issue, which is what kind of federal collusion or collusion with state agents has been happening here in Santa Cruz. The answer is lots of collusion has been happening. Well, what do you think, Scott?
Well, I don't know if anybody remembers in the paper, I think it was in October, maybe September, There was some guy that got busted with, like, you know,
hoeing
200 pounds of pot and a half $1 million under the mattress in his house. And there was, like, you know, this was the city police doing this. Now, supposedly they got their information from a bunch of crackheads or from a bunch of crankheads that got busted. And they said, well, we're, you know, we can give you somebody really big. It wasn't somebody big that was in the crack world or crank world. It was somebody that's selling marijuana, a big-time marijuana seller.
And the next thing you know, they're calling him part of a cartel or...
You haven't heard of the new snitch program?
Anyway, what I'm saying here is that, yeah, no, I mean, such programs are, you know, at least I've heard of them, you know, anecdotally. But, you know, the issue here is this was not even mentioned at the city council in terms of this staff report. And it may be that since November, there's been no cooperation with the feds and no cooperation with the state authorities. But they aren't talking about that. They aren't making they aren't even claiming that. And they aren't talking about what had happened previous to this time. So we don't have any indication of what's been happening. And
well, they were talking about he was talking about 2006. And this drug bust I was talking about happened in 2006. There was a lengthy investigation into this guy before they actually busted him. So there was a lot of police man hours put into busting this guy. And I guess it didn't even show up on this list that Martine was reading.
You know how much it cost to use SWAT
And again, also, I mean, good point, Scott, but the point also is that there is we're talking about collusion with other agencies.
And
you're making the point that even the thing that they did mention wasn't accurate, that you think that this huge bust was not a part of that. Maybe that was the one case. I think they mentioned one case.
Yeah, but...
That sounds, for me, I mean, for some reason that sounds unlikely, maybe because I don't know. I mean, I don't have an inside source here, but I do know that it's very persuasive that there's been nothing about state and federal cooperation mentioned here. If they didn't have it, then why didn't they say we had no federal and state cooperation?
Given the questions and
there's Martine. He's hearing,
issues with respect to the committee
and
the fact that there really aren't really a whole lot of data for a committee to review just because there's just not a lot of activity in this area, staff has recommended.
Of course, there is a lot of data because there's no data at all about state and federal agencies. And Scott here has pointed out the big busts have not been really looked into. So one questions, you know, I don't know. I haven't got Scott here. Maybe, you know, who knows? He could be a pusher himself trying to discredit our police department. But I think we need to look into this further. And I think we need a more open perspective on this. And the Oversight Commission could provide that if it is able to get past John Barisoni using your money to challenge in court what you voted for. And then you get to pay his salary as he challenges it.
That it be structured to essentially meet three times to establish itself and then meet semi-annually thereafter to comply with the semi-annual reporting requirements of the ordinance. And if it needed to meet more regularly for whatever reason, they could hold special meetings. And so that was trying to balance the requirements of the ordinance with staff resources and the reporting requirements of the ordinance. That's a brief overview, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Martine, Lynn, and then Cynthia?
It got my attention when you said it at the end. So go over that one more time about the part about the difficulty with
Lynn Robinson, council member,
with a committee member.
The city attorney might
respond to that. If you John Barisoni. City charter at section 1702 provides that it's a misdemeanor for a person to violate any provision of the city charter.
This is the usual. You
and
can't
it's
talk
punishable
to the police
by up to 6 months in jail. So
this is Barisoni giving the reasons that you can't direct the city. You can't, if he doesn't want a commission to be set up, he states, well, it's a violation of the city charter. For example, we wanted to, well, if he doesn't want the police told to do things, then he will say it's a violation of the city charter for the city council to direct the police to do anything. If he does want the police to do things, like, for example, the crackdown downtown against homeless and poor people and drug dealers and spitters and you know, abusive behavior, as Emily Riley calls it, then you direct the city manager to direct the police, and it's not a violation of the charter. So it's a complete red herring.
that I'm concerned about this ordinance potentially directing appointed public officials to do things in violation of the charter is you're placing them in basically a position where they may incur criminal liability. So that's one of the reasons I think it's very important to have a court weigh in on this so we can proceed with some level of assurance that what the committee is authorized to do by the court, they can do so with, you know, the understanding that they're not being in potentially violation of the charter and incurring criminal liability.
But does that include citizens that are appointed, or is it just the elected?
Any person. Your committees are simply appointed agents of the city council. So to the extent that the charter refers to council members, that includes their appointees as well.
So that's anybody on the committee.
And so, again, you don't hear any city council member actually asking a question, wait a minute, why can't we just ask the city manager to do this? Or why can't the commission member say to the city manager, ask the police officer a question? Not one of the city council members either has the interest, the awareness, or maybe it's the courage, although I can't imagine. Rotkin certainly knows about this. Coonerty, Robinson, and Matthews, who 3 weeks ago got the police to do this crackdown downtown, which we're still feeling, knows. And they clarified 2 weeks ago at the council meeting that they didn't go to the police directly because they knew that was a violation of the charter. They went to the city manager to go to the police. So, obviously, everybody in the council knows this is horseshit, or at least they've heard this as being horseshit 2 weeks before on another issue. Yet on this issue, they're allowing city money to be spent by the city attorney to go to the courts, in essence, to claim that this is an issue, that, oh gosh, these commission members are going to be held liable for misdemeanors if they ask police officers for information, which is ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous anyway. Anybody can ask the police for information. If you demand and give an order to a police officer, and that's not provided for in this bill, that would be a problem. But that can be circumvented, as you were saying, Scott, by just going to the city manager. But nobody on the council, including those who know very clearly this is the case, like Matthews and Rotkin, bring this up. The reason being, I believe, they don't want this measure in the first place.
Well, that's it. They don't want a commission because this so-called oversight committee looks too much like the police review board, but just on a one-issue police review board. And they got rid of the police review board because the police union hated it. And when Mark Half Moon became the chairperson of the police review board,
African-American guy,
and he then, when they were going into, they'd go into closed session to discuss how they were going to come down on an issue. When he kicked out the police representative, because up until the point he became the chair of that committee, the police representative that was at these meetings always went into closed session with them. When he kicked the police representative out of their closed session and said, well, there's no reason for you to be here with us when we're in closed session, immediately after that, the city council was, well, we gotta close down the police review board because it's costing too much money, and we can be better served by just having this attorney from Palo Alto look over all any complaints that come in about the police.
I think that's it. Continuing with this.
Thea.
I'm generally supportive of the direction before
Matthews.
Us, but I wanted to point out a concern. At the bottom of the second page, it as has been mentioned in the staff report, recommends the committee meet monthly for the first 3 months to get going, then semi-annually. And it says then in our staff report, if there's reason to hold additional meetings beyond the semi-annual schedule, special meetings may be scheduled. And we have all along expressed concern about the demand on staff, and we have seen this from time to time in other commissions where the commission, without prior council direction, created a much larger charge or work program for itself that was very demanding of staff time. So what I would like to suggest is that we add in the recommendation here on page 1, and I'd be prepared to make this motion, all the text that we have, but then add at the end where it says, and then to meet semi-annually thereafter, and add the sentence, and that any additional meetings must be authorized in advance by the City Council.
And again, this is Cynthia Matthews, a big proponent of cutting police review, coming in and cutting this even before it starts. Again, it seems extravagant that the staff claims it's going to cost $50,000 for five meetings. I can't really quite imagine how they get that figure. I'd like to see what the breakdown is on that. But here she is saying if they need more meetings, let's say a number of people start complaining that there are problems or there's big crackdowns, that they're going to have to go get City Council approval before they have a meeting.
Have much more control over the kind of work program that's going to be generated by this.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of staff or comments before we hear from the public? I want to wait to make the motion.
Yeah,
until we hear
I just
want
to say where I was
okay,
headed.
Mike?
I wanted to ask the city attorney, John, can you tell anything to the public
Rodkin
about what's happening with this action for declaratory relief, you know, how long it's likely to take, what court is it in, just, you know, basic information about what's going on there.
Yeah.
This is the PR cover, because Rodkin likes to pose as a progressive on campus and doesn't want to be known as the anti-marijuana guy. But he, in fact, is a supporter of this proposal to gut the whole thing by sending Barisoni into court, or at least to have no public discussion of it, because they've already gone into court. This happened through closed session a week or two ago, and it didn't happen after a real public discussion where people said, we voted on this. Now do we want to spend our money to send the city attorney into a court? Not until we're fucking sued, man. I mean, why should we spend money in advance? Well, because the city council wants to sabotage this before it starts is my perspective.
Bond collection.
I don't know.
A week ago Friday in Santa Cruz County Superior Court.
John Barisoni, city attorney.
The defendants, because we need defendants, are the two proponents of the ordinance who brought the petitions forward, Mr. Reinerman and Ms. Carey. And Ben Rice in town will be representing them. And I have a meeting scheduled for Thursday at 2 o'clock with Mr. Rice and Mr. Hopper from the ACLU to discuss the issues and see if there's a possibility that we might be able to come to some sort of an agreement that we could present to the court.
There's an incredible kind of meddling that's going on here, because this same conversation happened 6 months ago. It was in the papers in the summer when Barisoni wanted to do something similar, and the council kind of rejected these claims. I guess it rejected them as premature. They'll say, wait until, let's hope the voters vote this down, but the business community was too busy going after Measure G. They didn't want to pay people a decent wage downtown. So they kind of, Measure K had to be put on the back burner, and the police department wasn't able to muster sufficient prejudice against the measure. Although I think it would have been hard for them to defeat this measure. Anyway, what you've got is the second and third and fourth bites out of the apple that this council wants to do, using city money to go after a measure passed by the voters. And again, the defendants are the people who signed this measure. You know, they have to go to court to defend the measure. It's incredible. I mean, it seems like a form of massive harassment. Rodkin is saying, oh, no, this is very mellow. We're just looking for declaratory relief. We're just trying to kind of iron out these problems. And there is no problem. If, you know, the only issue he's raised has to do with the city manager. The issue, if somebody wants to request information from a police officer, which I think you could do anyway directly. And if you have any questions, you could do it through the city manager. I don't understand how there could be any problem. Scott, maybe I'm missing something. Am I missing something here?
Well, you're always missing something.
Of course, yes, I know.
Real
missing the
public money.
Yes,
but I think, you know, as I said before, this is just an effort to stop this committee or commission, whatever it's going to be called, from being set up in the first place. And if it is set up to completely gut it, so it has absolutely no authority or any power, all it'll do is look at some abstract notes from that are given to them from the police, with probably large areas blotted out so they can't see who, any badge numbers, anything like that. Probably not even any dates, except for maybe the year. And that's all they're going to get. They're not going to get any real meat.
Although, actually, the ordinance provides for real meat, so we'll see if they.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is an effort to make it so, to get it so that it's they get nothing.
Right.
A lot of that they rely on the National Institute of Health, which is.
We're in the preliminary stages right now.
And again, because the public don't always understand these distinctions between, you know, what kind of suits are involved, say a little bit more about a declaratory relief suit versus are we suing these two people and hoping to, like, recover money from them?
Well, we're asking the court to...
Oh, you're just attempting to gut all their work. That's all you're trying to do.
Is tell us what our rights and responsibilities are, given the fact that we perceive that there is a conflict between state law and the city charter and what the ordinance requires certain appointed public officials to do.
Barrisoni is not being clear about what this so-called conflict is. He tried to raise it last summer, and it was unpersuasive to the council. He isn't being explicit here, and we don't get to know what's going on behind these closed doors. I guess you can go to the court documents, and maybe he will hear about it in court.
Other people might not believe there's the conflict. They might have a different legal opinion. So they will be able to come into court and present their point of view. And the court makes that determination and says, yes, city, you're right, or no, city, you're wrong, or yes, city, you're right on these points, but wrong on these points. And as a result, I declare that the ordinance is enforceable to this extent, and then we have that to go forward with. We obey the court's order.
There's another misconception here. Enforceable. There's no real enforcement mechanism in this ordinance. As far as I can see, it's, I suppose you could go and get a writ of mandate, an order from the court if they don't, you know, if the city refuses to act on this. But there's no criminal penalties are provided for police officers. In fact, they specifically say no disciplinary action can be taken. So this is completely misleading. What this really is, as you say, Scott, is it's the police department leading through the city attorney and the city manager to gut the whole thing before it starts.
The comfort of knowing that what we're doing has been sanctioned by a court and officials can proceed accordingly.
And because the vote of the people has, in this Measure K, with the various sections were severable and separatable, in effect, whatever the court tells us about the issues we're raising doesn't affect, for example, the section that declares this to be the lowest priority.
So they're going to sever the only meaningful section. That's what Rodkin is saying. But he's going to say, okay, it can still be the lowest priority, see? That we just trust your police department.
Is that right?
We're not challenging that.
And
other people
we
who are
didn't challenge
interested.
The idea that we're going to send a letter to the to the various government officials above us concerned about the war on crime, et cetera.
They're going to send a letter.
The
hey,
only direction I received from the council were to challenge or to raise the issues that concern the citizens'
There it is. He has received direction from the city council, that's John Barrisoni, the city attorney talking, to challenge the commission. Scott, why is that the key part?
Well, the reason that's the key part is because it's not that he's doing this because he saw a flaw in the law. He's doing this because the city council directed him to do that. Now, why are they directing him to do that? Was there pressure brought to bear by the police department, by the police benevolent society, or the police union?
And why was it done in private?
Was
in a closed council session?
Was it, you know, something that the city manager decided was a flaw in the law? Somewhere, somebody decided this law was flawed.
Behind closed doors.
Because of this commission thing that is part of this law.
At a closed session of the city
council.
That's
the big flaw here in the law, is this commission that has some even abstract power over the police. It can't exist in this town.
Right. It's politically, that's the flaw. Of course, it's not a legal flaw.
Thank you. I think that's helpful clarification for the public, because I've gotten several emails of people that didn't understand what was going on there. I think that's a lot clearer than what these people...
Actually, those emails did understand what was going on, probably, although, again, the emails were not included in the council packet, so we couldn't see the correspondence there.
Thank you. Any other questions of staff? Would anyone from the public like to address us on this item? Mr. Bethke, come forward, please. Hi.
Afternoon, Madam Mayor, Council Members. Michael Bethke, 229 Union. Just want to submit into the administrative record another letter to follow up my previous letter, February 5th, and the comments I made during oral communication on February 13th. We're just respectfully asking the council to consider a slight amendment to the letter that's going to be going out, I believe, this Friday to the president and the governor and all our elected officials and our representatives in Washington, D.C., in Sacramento. And just all we're asking is one or two things here. Have the letter start off with only 20% of the citizens of Santa Cruz supported this initiative, or you can more plainly say 20% of the citizens of Santa Cruz supported this initiative. I think the record will show that's the true reflection of the quote citizens that supported this initiative. And appreciate your consideration and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And I would just, I guess, repeat my response to your email, Mr. Bethke, which is I haven't seen the letter yet, but my expectation is that it will reflect the will of the voters and not the will of all of the citizens of Santa Cruz. Just
there she is. That's Emily Riley, the mayor, actually saying that she's trying to go along with Bethke and say the letter will reflect not the will of that will affect the will of the voters, but not all of the people of Santa Cruz, when in fact the voters do reflect the will of Santa Cruz. I'm sorry, that's the nature of representative democracy, or the people who vote, the people who show up are the ones who actually make the decisions. So she's trying to go along with Bethke, but of course she can't, because the actual law requires them to send a letter saying the voters of the city of Santa Cruz is actually stated in the initiative. I mean, it's all kind of secondary, because, you know, they're going to send a letter. And the significant thing here is that Bethke is not criticizing the Oversight Commission, because I think he sees that it's going to be gutted, or that he sees that the council's already trying to gut it. So he doesn't have to criticize that.
What my experience in traditionally the way letters are written. As I said, I haven't seen the letter yet.
Well, yeah, if I may, Madam Mayor, if you read the ordinance as it's presented by Mr. Brunel tonight, it's in quotations, you know, the recommendation that the citizens of Santa Cruz is a verbiage to be used. So we're just asking that it be qualified to more truthfully represent, well, what number of citizens are we talking about? Percentage of citizens are we talking about?
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
would
ma'am.
Anyone else like to address?
So instead of correcting him and saying, sorry, we can't do that, that's not what, I mean, she is sympathetic with him. I mean, this is the city council you elected, folks. This is Emily Riley, Smiley Riley, the peace activist, the, you know, libertarian in terms of, you know, stop the harassment of people on ridiculous issues like drugs. I don't know. Actually, she didn't take a position on that. The people have a sense of Riley as this compassionate, sweet. Yeah.
She was a great supporter of Wham. I remember her joining Valerie Alton.
No, she did a fast against the sleeping ban when she was, you know, when she was not in office. She changed when she ran
menopause.
For office.
It's menopause.
Don't know. It gives us all pause. Men and women pausing.
Good question.
Oh, you had a question for him? I'm sorry. Just wait one minute, please, Mr. North.
Just to be
this is Tony Madrigal trying to figure out what's going on.
So you're saying truthful representation of the voting results. You mean the voter turnout in that election that is 20%? Are you referring to the voter turnout that 20% of the roughly 56,000 people in Santa Cruz were the ones that turned out to vote?
No, actually, Mr. Madrigal, 33% of the population was actually registered to vote, and this would actually represent the 11,000 votes would actually represent 33% of that. So you could go one way or the other. You could say 33% of the registered voters, if you will, as a qualifier, that'd be acceptable too.
Oh, I see.
But that 11,000 people who voted for this measure only represents 20% of the population of the city of Santa Cruz.
That's what I,
which is approximately 56,000.
Thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Council members, members of the public, first of all, regarding what Mr. Bethke says, the initiative is quite clear. You can't change it. It's the language is there. And your attempt to go behind the backs of the community to gut the most important part of this, the Oversight Committee, because of apparently your partiality and apprehensions about the police department's hypersensitivity to any kind of oversight, I think is outrageous. It's particularly outrageous because 2 weeks ago, you have the same kind of communication through the police department where you give direction through the city manager. And yet here you're saying that this board can't even request information. Seems to me it clearly can. You shouldn't be going to a private meeting of the city council behind closed doors to attempt to overturn the will of the voters, spend our taxpayer money to pay this man to go and do that. You should have a public meeting here to discuss that issue if that's what you want to do, if you want to subvert the will of the voters. I think that's outrageous. Accordingly, I recommend that you vote here, that you amend this. You obviously have no choice but to fulfill the will of the voters and initiate this whole measure and set up this commission, but that you withdraw this court challenge immediately. And you simply clarify that any requests coming from this commission be through the city manager, not directly to the police department, hence not violating state law or the charter. I think that would satisfy everyone except those inveterate opponents, such perhaps Mr. Porter or other people who just have no sympathies whatsoever for any kind of decriminalization of marijuana in this way, or those who can't stand any kind of police oversight. So that's my suggestion, and I encourage you to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other comments? Hi.
Hi. Mayor Riley, Vice Mayor Coonerty, City Council.
I know that Scott here wants to hear Michael Tomasi, but we only have 15 minutes left. And I actually have an interview here with Mayor Riley, which I'm about to play, which I had about 4 days ago. And I thought I should play it quickly. We don't really have time to – I can't break in on her, so we can hear the whole damn thing. And I'll break in on her probably by analyzing it on Sunday when I come back at 9:30. We do a show from 9:30 to 1, me and whoever happens to show up for this show. So if you – haven't had enough, you can come back at 9:30 on Sunday. This is Mayor Riley. Anybody can get an appointment, as you will hear. And I talked to her on Monday, I think it was Monday afternoon. And mainly the subjects here had to do with the sleeping ban. But before we leave the subject of this commission, I would encourage people to call the city council and demand that this lawsuit be dropped, that this declaratory relief judgment be dropped, in favor of simply a statement from the city council that they understand that the commission will be advised that they have to go through the city manager. And you'd be saving a lot of money. Scott?
Well, I don't even know if it has to go that far as to where the commission has to go through the city manager. Why can't the city council direct the city manager to monthly, bi-monthly, quarterly, whatever, to get this information from the police that's needed by this commission? I mean, they just tell the guy to do it, and then that's what happens.
That sounds good, too. I like
this.
It's good. So here we have Riley, and we're not going to be able to hear all this because we're running up against the clock, but here it is, and I will try to struggle. Scott's been fidgeting here as I butt in with the occasional clarification, though Anita likes my clarifications.
I like it. I think you clear and to the point and direct.
Nee, nee, nee. So we have differences of opinion as to the values of your talk show here, host. By the way, if you want to call in, you can talk still, 427-3772, and here we go.
Hey, Emily. And I'm here, and the mayor is greeting me. Greetings.
Greetings.
I don't want to pick up my umbrella. Thanks.
You want to bring it in?
Okay, why not? Good idea. So Mayor Riley has a policy of scheduling meetings for members of the public who'd like to meet with the mayor, and you do that by contacting the city council offices during business hours and checking with the secretarial staff there for a 15-minute appointment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 420-5020. And it's Monday from 2 to 4 and Thursday from 4 to 5 are the set times every week.
Mm-hmm. And usually it's best to come, a week or two in advance? Or?
Usually the week before. By the end of the week, the next week is usually filled.
We're going to interrupt this little interview that I had with Riley, which isn't terribly exciting, but I'll be playing it on Sunday. Thanks, Anita. Maybe you'll be coming in to help me out. And we have a caller on the line, a notorious critic of city council who hasn't been heard much from recently. Hi, caller.
Hi.
And who is this?
This is Roxanne.
Hey, Roxanne.
Hey, I don't know if you know it or not, but the county sends its employees, city council, all kinds of people to these special classes where they teach you to agree with everyone. Is my radio in the background bothering you?
No, it's not bothering me, but it's maybe bothering you because...
No, it's not bothering me. I'm just not going to listen to it. I forgot to turn it down.
Yeah.
Anyway, they just have these special classes that they send you to if you're in any kind of a position that has to do with being under fire. Social workers go to it. I'm sure our city council attends it by the way I see them handling people now. And I think it's extremely distressing because it sounds like, I agree with you, we're going to do that in just 1 minute, but really they're not doing anything. It's kind of a new age thing instead of having any kind of controversy with people.
Yeah, I mean, I can believe that. Do you know if that's a particular city class that's being done? Or?
Well, since city council is city, I'm just assuming that they have their own group they go to.
Uh-huh.
You know, that their employees do the same thing as the county. Because they're not involved with county, really. But I noticed this real trickle-down thing when they started these classes because I used to work for the county. I noticed, like, all of a sudden Board of Supervisors was doing that. Hey, that's a great idea. That's wonderful. We'll think about that, you know, and never to be heard from again.
Now, you've abandoned going to city council partially because of your health, maybe primarily, but also you became rather disillusioned with council after the three musty turds or musketeers or amigos came in 1998, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar.
Well, that isn't when I stopped going. I actually stopped going when they arrested people for nothing. I was practically knocked off my feet one night when the police, when James Ney was waiting in line to speak. He hadn't even said anything, and he was, like, just bumped as hard as could be and dragged out of city council on some trumped-up thing where they kept him in the back room for the whole council meeting. Never really arrested him. Just kept him from speaking, and we all know what's happened to you. And frankly, I'm not like you, Robert. I'm not going to spend a night in jail just for speaking to city council. At that time, I brought my children to city council. At this time, I have grandchildren that are usually with me. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to have CPS take kids away from me because I said the wrong thing at city council and I've been arrested there. You know, it's just so fascist and so unfair, and people can't be represented.
Anita has something that she wants to.
Yeah, I wanted to say I'm so in agreement with you. I feel strongly, and for that reason alone, I think that we need to really respect and let Robert know just how much we appreciate. And I'm not trying to stroke him for any particular reason, but thank God Robert has the cojones to go out and do what he does, because most people don't have the vitality, the strength, or the wisdom. I happen to think Robert is brilliant and underestimated. I'm really appreciating
God, what drugs did he give you tonight?
None at all.
Jeez. God, Robert, you must have something good down there. Where are you?
Hey, this is a medical marijuana scene here, I got to tell you.
I know. It does take somebody to do it. And it's really sad because I really, in my heart, believe it should be all of us. But the risk is really great. Can you imagine saying it's risky? Risky. To go to a city council meeting.
We need people like him to...
And I don't know if they're still doing what they used to do, but when they brought the new rules of decorum to bear, you know, the place started being filled with cops dressed like gang members, wearing black shorts, black baseball caps, you know, standing there with nightsticks around the room. I mean, how agreeable is that for citizens to come and speak their mind?
Well, the whole rules of decorum were instituted to shut Robert up.
Of course.
Well, I must say, the implication that I am indecorous, I find questionable.
They aren't too happy with Michael Tomasi. There's a number of people they aren't happy with, but, you know, they don't. If you go in there and speak the truth, in any way, shape, or form, you're violating the rules of decorum. That's how I see it.
Well, the rules of decorum are actually a way of tightly stopping, for example, spontaneous responses from the audience. For example, shouting ridiculous or hissing if you think that something
but
is wrong.
But you can't even direct a comment to any
correct. You're not allowed to direct a comment.
Councilmen, though they may be guilty of horrendous.
Right, and you can't even if your name is mentioned, you're maligned. You can't respond to that from the floor. You can't even walk up and request that the city council give you the opportunity to speak. I mean, I guess you could try to send them a note or something. I mean, let's put it this way. All these things can be represented as, quote, disruptions. And that's one of the issues that I'm going to be bringing up this month, at the end of this month, in a federal court. I think it's March 29th in San Jose, when Mayor Riley, Ed Porter, former mayors Fitzmaurice, Kennedy, I think possibly even Councilmember Rotkin, if he was a plaintiff in the I was arrested twice at City Council.
Right.
I mean, I was arrested more times than that at City Council, but I was arrested at least twice at City Council for essentially peaceful, non-disruptive, dissenting behavior. In one case, I raised my hand in a mock Nazi salute when the mayor threatened to arrest a woman at the mic for trying
now,
to speak.
I'm trying to remember, Robert,
time you
did
had
you
a
say
naked
speak Kyle
puppet.
When you did that?
What's that?
When you raised your arm in the Nazi salute, did you say Sieg Heil?
No, I was silent.
Oh, I thought you said Sieg Heil. I was trying to remember because when you raised your arm like that, I was thinking exactly the same thing. Maybe it was me that was thinking Sieg Heil, but it was so Nazi-like what they were doing that night.
Yeah, and I think your point about the rules of decorum, this is something created by ex-Mayor Fitzmaurice, who served 8 years after coming to power on a Green Party ticket. You know, he didn't like the fact that he refused to expand shelter for the homeless or suspend the sleeping ban in the winter of 2000-2001. So we brought a bunch of homeless people every morning to his offices. Politely, courteously, we served them coffee outside. We invited them to come and tell him how fucking freezing it was out there, how the police were harassing people, and how they needed a place to stay, and they needed him to call a session of the city council.
Yeah, but how can you make a beautiful poem out of that, Robert?
Well, I don't know. But, I mean, in any case, after that is when the rules against disruption came. He had us banned from the city council offices. He got a court to issue an injunction against us. We called ourselves the Coffee Clatch Three. It was myself.
Didn't they try and arrest you for spilling food?
For
from
what?
The Second Harvest Food Bank barrel?
They claimed that we should be banned from city offices for a variety of offenses, including asking for change for a $20 bill, harassing. The main claim was we harassed their secretary, Anna Brooks. In fact, of course, we didn't harass her, but she was placed in the middle of this whole situation. We tried to be courteous, but she adopted a very officious attitude, and Fitzmaurice used her, he was the mayor at that time, as a kind of a front where he would say, you're harassing a secretary, you have to get out of here, I'm going to call the police. We would say, our tape recorders are on, we're staying here, this is a public area, call the police if you wish. We're waiting to talk to some city council members, which is what you usually do when you're waiting in the city council offices. And they ended up with this whole new set of decorum rules, which they created, which I regularly violate them because they're unconstitutional. One of the rules is, for example, well, they have two sets of decorum rules. One's decorum in city offices. The other is decorum in city council. In city offices, you're not supposed, for example, to tape record what happens. That was the only reason we were able to survive a court challenge, is because we recorded every minute of everything that went on to prove to the judge 6 months later that they had no grounds for any concerns with us. Of course, during that time, we'd been banned. So it served its purpose, just like his arrest of James Ney stopped the sit-in protest. His arrest of the three of us stopped the protest there. I mean, it was it's nothing we should be surprised about. City officials will do that.
David Silva being hauled away.
And David Silva was, of course, thrown into a pillar by Sergeant Crane back in 1996.
I have so many memories of that time that, you know, tried to make us fear-ridden. Tried to make us afraid to just say simple, simple things. It didn't matter if it was the beach blast issue that we felt was unfair to the people who live there. It didn't matter what it was. They were going to scare the crap out of us any way they could.
You know, I mean, that unfortunately...
I mean, why do these people... This is the thing that I don't get. why do they think we stayed at meetings till 1 and 2 in the morning? Because it was fun? You know, these were issues that were near and dear to people's hearts, and a lot of people didn't even have the courage before this started to come out. They were afraid of those people. They didn't want to get arrested by the police who would recognize them for trumped-up charges, things missing on their car, et cetera. You know, people were already in fear, and the people that went out and did speak out were even terrorized more. I think it's ludicrous that this city council sends all these missives to Bush and to the federal government when they've been terrorizing Santa Cruz for so long. They are just as bad as Bush. It's just that they don't have as much power.
They seem to have forgotten.
And maybe people are dying in Iraq because of Bush, but people are dying in the freezing fucking cold because of these people.
I agree with you, Roxanna. I've got to go. I appreciate your calling in. We're running up on the next hour. Please call again. We'll pick up this conversation maybe on Sunday when I come back at 9:30.
Okay. Thanks, Robert.
Thanks for calling in, Roxanna.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Scott Graham, thank you for being a part of this show. I also, Steve and Anita, Anita Henry and Steve Senko, thank you for talking about profiteering in local cannabis clinics. If anybody has more concerns about this or more information, I'd appreciate it if you would give a call to Anita. She's trying to find some more information about it, maybe some citizen action, 425-3444, or you can call the Huff line at 423-HUFF. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I'll be back on Sunday with more, in fact, much more, 3.5 hours, maybe 4.5 hours. I come in early. So stick with me and maybe we can stick it to them. You never can tell. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We'll do it again.
I don't want to sing a song about the war.
Number nine, 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 number nine.
Slow.
9. Number nine.
Yes, indeed, it is time for the C2D show. Cream to the dregs. Uncle Dennis is off this week. Asked me to fill in. My name is Skidmark Bob, so stay tuned. Got some classic rock and other things. Starting off with the Beatles, Revolution number 9, without a doubt. Stay tuned, keep it locked. C2D radio show.
Yeah. Bicycle.